Welcome to Hyperlocal, the podcast inspiring economic developers, job creators, and community champions with local solutions and global perspectives. I'm your host, Mason Ainsworth. Thank you for taking the time to join us today, and let's get into it. Joining us today is Tyson McMahon. Tyson is championing innovative policies to support economic development. As the business development consultant, food and beverage at the City of Hamilton, he supports real-world problem solving for his community through innovative policy approaches. As co-chair of the Economic Developers Council of Ontario's Bright Ideas Committee, he encourages economic developers to think differently, shine brightly, and develop toolkits and ideas to benefit the industry and our communities. From Tyson's start at the town of Amherstburg to MDB Insight in the city of Guelph, he has fostered a deep passion for helping others through economic development. In this podcast, we discuss the wrong government for the job, why municipalities are ill-equipped to handle the infrastructure deficit, how Hamilton is 70 to 80% rural with 679 farms and the largest sugar refinery in Canada, advice for attending conferences to get the most out of your experience, the EDCO board elections, and much more. Now let's get into it. Good morning, Tyson. Thank you so much for joining us on Hyperlocal today. Really appreciate your time.
No, thank you, Mason, and pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and so we'll just hop right into things. I know when I meet folks, whether it be like yourself at a conference, I know we met through the Bright Ideas competition and then met in person at the EDCO conference. And I always wonder, meeting people, and I know it's corny to say, and I pretty much say it every episode, but where did these people come from? You know, what does their journey look like? You know, whether it was when they were kids or teenagers or in university or college or whatever. And how did they get into the roles they are today? I know you've been an economic and policy analyst, and my apologies if I mispronounce this, but it's Amherstburg?
Amherstburg,
yes. To being an economic development officer in investment attraction and real estate at the City of Guelph, to your current role as a business development consultant in food and beverage. And I'm curious, what inspired you to pursue this path? And how is your passion for, you know, helping and supporting people and getting involved help make a difference and kept you going through this process?
No, well, appreciate it. And yeah, and so I think like most people in economic development, we kind of find ourselves in the role or kind of by accident, if you will. I know when I started, I actually started in economic development through my master's program at the University of Windsor. So I had the option of doing the thesis or doing a paid internship at a municipality. And like many at the time, being a graduate student, I took the paid position, and that landed me at the town of Amherstburg in the economic development department. So after that internship was done, I was actually thankful enough to turn that into a full-time role as the economic and policy analyst. So working on various business retention, investment attraction, I was also tapped to do the writing of the financial plans and policies for the city based off of a Ministry of Municipal Affairs review. And then from there, ended up becoming a business development analyst for MDB Insight, which used to be Miller Dickinson Blaze. So that was a kind of small economic development firm that recently or a few years ago got bought by Deloitte, and then founded my way at the City of Guelph. And as a starting off as a business analyst, moving my way up, became the investment or the development officer for investment traction real estate, where they're not just investment traction, but also selling the business or the city's owned employment lands in the Hanley Creek Business Park, and then found myself with the City of Hamilton. So really, for me, what kind of finding this kind of role, this career by accident, I really stuck with it just based off of the ability of seeing the impact that economic development can have on businesses, but mostly on community and people, right? I think there's a significant role that we can play in partnership with other city employees or city staff in really driving and creating the conditions for economic growth. And that's what I've seen in my time, whether it's the private sector or public sector, just the ability of economic development development staff to really have an impact on creating the conditions for economic growth. And I think that's really where my passion lies in the career is not necessarily creating the economic success. I think government's role really is to provide the conditions and ensure policies align with what the community and business needs are. So really that was kind of my passion, is just throughout getting into it in happenstance is seeing the really seeing the impact that you can have on community. And that's what really drove me to continue in the profession.
I love that. I think that's an awesome origin story. and it shows your passion. And I think, it's interesting. I know you said happenstance there, and that's a common theme I hear a lot of people mention. And I think that's so important. You know, everything happens for a reason. And I've heard from quite a few folks who I've chatted to in economic development so far that it's, one of those things where, hey, like, I didn't really choose this profession necessarily, but it chose me. And then Definitely. Once I got involved, I was hooked. And I think that's something where if you go to, something like EDCO or the federal conference, it's, you see the passion there and the individuals, and it's pretty easy to see that those folks are meant to be there.
Totally. And on that, I can't see myself doing anything else really, whether it's private, public, I can't see myself being anything other than an economic developer in some sort of capacity, right? So
yeah, it makes sense. I just wanted to pick up on something you said there, Tyson. You mentioned that at the beginning you opted for the paid internship at a municipality. I'm curious for folks who are listening, maybe we have some students listening that are looking at doing placements in the future. Is there something you did through that process, or did you just get matched immediately? Did you have to reach out to that municipality? You know, are there any tips associated with that that you'd recommend if somebody was currently in that process themselves or in the future?
No, good question. And so for that process, it was through the Masters of Political Science program at the University of Windsor, in which they did a really good job. So as part of that internship, there were a number of different organizations that were looking for interns. So I believe there was the town of Amherstburg, the city of Windsor. There was also the International Joint Commission, which was, I believe that's the commission that manages the waterways between the US and Canada. So we actually, how the process kind of unfolded is there was a number, I wanted to say five or six organizations that were looking for interns or had positions open. We chose our top three, interviewed in those top three, and then we were essentially selected or identified based off of who the organization's number one pick was, where thankfully for me, my number one pick was the town of Amherstburg. I was also their number one pick, so it actually worked out great. But for me, that was also during that interview process, it was definitely seeing what would fit for not just what I wanted to do for that 6 to 8 months, but really what kind of what internship would put me in the best position moving forward from a career perspective. So it definitely, I made my choice based off of maybe longer term assumptions that I had in terms of what's this going to do for me 2, 5, 10 years down the road. So that's maybe the advice I would give for anyone selecting an internship or selecting kind of that first work experience as part of a graduate or leaving university is really what's going to pay dividends for me in the future. What's going to set me up for success for the second or third role, as opposed to is this really what I want to do now, essentially, right? I think that's the best advice I can get, is always take roles that you see yourself growing from and learning from.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And especially the, having that focus. I know I've spoken to a few universities in the past, and when I speak to students, it's, hey, when you have the opportunity to work on some of these projects, whatever you're doing, because, sometimes you get a project and it's really laid out specifically what it is, but sometimes they open it up and say, you can do whatever you want or any subject or things like that. So take those as opportunities to kind of build that background and to build that resume and be able to focus on some of those subjects that are going to be handy in the future for when you go to get into the workforce, because I do believe that those will pay dividends in the future. And And if you just do something that you think's cool, that's not really related at all to what you want to do, it might not work out. It might, but I think it's worth the time. You have to do it anyway, so you might as well be strategic about it.
Well, exactly. And I took the job in Amherstburg while I was living in Windsor, and not realizing, oh, I have a 40-minute commute in front of me, and I don't have a vehicle, and there's no public transit, right? So something where I'm making a decision, and I ended up figuring out, I ended up finding some money to afford my first vehicle, which was a two-door Toyota Echo, for only just under 3 grand, which got me there and back. But again, that was something where taking the opportunity to see the benefit that would accrue the years down the road, which I think I made the right decision. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And thinking of strategic ideas, I was, combing through your LinkedIn and I saw you had a publication on there, which was The Wrong Government for the Job: Why Municipalities Are Ill-Equipped to Handle the Infrastructure Deficit. And I know it dives a bit into Canada's infrastructure challenges and probably Ontario's as well. But given it was published about 10 years ago in 2015, I was wondering if you could give us just a brief overview of that. If you think that infrastructure deficit is still the case today, and then also, how have you observed that from an economic development role, whether it be in Guelph or in Hamilton or other places, where that's made a direct impact to improving and working on economic development in those communities?
Absolutely, yeah. So that report I did was taking a look at the municipalities and towns in Essex County, along with City of Windsor. So that was really just an assessment of taking a look at their asset management plans, which 10 years ago, again, there's and which I learned and still is the which is still the case today. There is no actual standard when it comes to a municipal asset database. Like even taking a look at the Financial Accountability Office of Ontario, despite the importance of infrastructure, there is no comprehensive municipal asset database that exists, which still to this day is the case, right? So that report really looked at the infrastructure gap, the deficits. It did a bit of a comprehensive review of the different municipalities in Essex and in Windsor area as to where their assets are, what were the conditions of the assets, and really trying to find or provide recommendation solutions for if municipalities are going to continue to shoulder the load of infrastructure in Ontario and Canada, how are they going to finance that? How are they going to pay for that? And another thing that many people don't realize is that municipalities own, in Ontario at least, own the majority of infrastructure in the province. So municipalities in Ontario actually own more infrastructure, manage more infrastructure than both the federal and provincial governments combined. And yet we have the most limited financial tools in our toolkit, if you will, to pay for and manage those assets. And really that's what the report was taking a look at, is that a lot of infrastructure has been downloaded to municipalities by the Harris government back in the 90s, and they did not download revenue tools, where instead you have a situation where municipalities are paying for it through the general levy or relying on transfers from other levels of government, whether it be the gas tax or infrastructure programs that all municipalities have to apply for and hopefully win, given that these are finite envelopes of money. And what has struck me is that even though this was written 10 years ago, the exact same problems exist today, where if anything, they've continued to be exasperated given economic conditions, given the challenges of municipalities raising funds, raising taxes. Some municipalities have looked at dedicated infrastructure levies to pay for that infrastructure gap. However, the results are still the same, as that the amount of infrastructure that needs to be managed and paid for is consistently out of the reach of municipalities without any new tools or approaches. And I would say that's, in my work today, that's had a critical impact on economic development projects, specifically when it comes to hydro capacity, and as well as sewage or wastewater. There's there's a challenge that municipalities have when it comes to just treating and managing that wastewater, given the significant amount of capital involved in new wastewater treatment plants or upgrading those plants. So I've seen that those challenges, the lack of funding and really the lack of ability to manage that infrastructure. And again, municipalities have done a good job with what they've been able to do. It's just in many cases, it's a task that's consistently out of reach for municipalities to manage and pay for. And it has had, not just in my time in Guelph, but I think in every community I've worked for, infrastructure has been a limiting factor when it comes to attracting new investment as well as supporting existing businesses grow and expand.
Absolutely. I've definitely heard from quite a few, especially in more rural communities where infrastructure is very much lacking, whether it be wastewater and such. And companies just say, hey, you know, it'd be great to come here, but we just can't because we need these things. But the cost is absorbent. So it makes a lot of sense and still very relevant today. I feel like we could have a whole podcast episode of just chatting about infrastructure and infrastructure deficits and such. But I won't get into that today for our viewers. But yeah, speaking of local impact, I know you highlighted some examples there. I was wondering maybe if you could tell us a little bit about what you've been up to in Hamilton, what's going on in the economic development scene there, and maybe a bit of the makeup of Hamilton as well. I know we chatted a bit briefly, and that actually a bit of Hamilton is actually quite rural, which I didn't know before. So I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about that, and if there's any specific projects or initiatives that you've been involved with and that you think would be worth highlighting today, whether that's about infrastructure or policy challenges and how those have helped drive community growth or job creation in the area.
Yeah, absolutely. And from Hamilton's standpoint, yeah, and you're right. About 70 to 80% of Hamilton is rural, which is a significant amount of its geographic representation.
70 to 80?
That's,
Wow.
yeah.
I did not know that. That's wild.
And you're not alone, right, Mason? I think a lot of people see Hamilton, they see the downtown, they see they think of the mountain, maybe Stoney Creek and maybe Dundas. And I'm referencing former communities before Hamilton was amalgamated. So that's kind of the perspective that even myself coming into, and I live in Guelph right now, is really understanding the impact that a rural economy has on Hamilton's economy as a whole. So in my role, I do both the food and beverage as well as the agri-food. So I kind of cover two sectors that are intertwined, if you will. And on the food and beverage side, there's a lot of great stuff happening. We've have a third flour mill going up at the Port of Hamilton, as well as what will be Canada's largest sugar refinery facility, looking to produce about 1 million metric tons of sugar a year at the port. And so we're seeing a lot of movement and a lot of interest from a food ingredient side of having food ingredients located in Hamilton produce food products and really using Hamilton as a springboard for selling those products throughout Canada, throughout Ontario, but also internationally. So I know there's been a few projects I've been working on to attract, which were currently in the works for a number of new bakery as well as confectionery companies looking into Hamilton, again, taking advantage of, excuse me, not only access to food ingredients, but also pricing. Sugar is about 30% cheaper in Canada than the US because we are based on world market prices. And that's provided us quite an advantage from a chocolate and confectionery perspective. On the rural side, we're seeing, again, given that we're about 70 to 80% rural, Hamilton is the third has the third most amount of farms in the GTA. So we're just behind Durham and Niagara region. We have about 679 farms in Hamilton. The average size is just shy of 170 acres, or just a bit more than 170 acres, I should say. And a lot of our production actually feeds into that food ingredient system that we have in the port. So we have things like soybean farming, corn farming, oil seeds, and where most of actually in things like winter wheat, where the majority of wheat comes out west to be produced into flower, and some of the, so beyond some of the food and beverage initiatives, a lot of the work I've been doing with the Ruler and the egg community has been around actually, I would say, modernizing our rural and agricultural policies. And again, I think it's no fault to Hamilton that, given that Hamilton is always considered maybe urban first and rural second, that maybe approach has found its way when it comes to policy planning. And a good example that I use is, I've been working with a farm. They're a multi-generational dairy farmer. They are actually starting to produce milk on site, where they've brought back milk delivery, to the point where they've brought back the milk person, the milkman, where you can actually order and have milk delivered to your door, which is the first that's happened in Hamilton since milk delivery used to be a thing. But why I bring that up from a policy standpoint is I've been working with them to navigate our zoning and policy planning when it comes to consuming food on site. So this gets into the weeds, but I know some in economic development will salivate over this, is that currently in Hamilton, when it comes to zoning, restaurants are prohibited on agricultural lands, which for all reason makes sense. We don't want a Denny's or some sort of large franchisee setting up an ag land. But however, given that there is no nuanced difference in definition, that actually prohibits a farm from selling food to someone on their farm that they can consume on site. And the example in this case was, if this dairy operation wanted to sell ice cream, they could not eat the ice cream on the farm. And that's something where I don't think anyone in Hamilton, whether it's policy staff, planning staff, or the community, would think that that's a would think that that's an actor or an accurate restriction, right? And I think that that's a very small aspect of a policy that, if you think, if that farm is not able to do it, how many other farms have maybe wanted to do something, wanted to serve farm products on site for consumption, but have found that bylaw, have found that restriction, and have pulled back. So that's just a very small policy implication, but has large implications from the ability of specifically rural and farmers to be able to expand and grow their operation. We all know farms are getting, we're losing farms, but farms are getting bigger. And a lot of family farms are struggling to make ends meet with just farming as the only source of income. That's why many move towards on-farm diversified uses, agritourism, things in which they can drive different revenue streams to farms, which, when it comes to selling food products for consumption on site, that's a significant revenue stream for many farms. So that's a real highly specific project or policy change that I'm looking to fix. Thankfully, working with staff, we are able to find a solution where they are able to get their variance, where, again, previously they were told they would need a zoning bylaw amendment and official plan amendment, which would cost that $30,000 to $40,000 just for an application. I can't see any farmer willing to spend that amount of money in order to sell ice cream on site. So it's those kind of barriers that we're looking, in my role, really looking to reduce, eliminate where we can, to allow rural communities, allow agricultural communities really to flourish by doing what they've always been doing, and that's growing food to feed people in Ontario and provide an experience. So that's just one of the, I would say, many policy implications that I'm trying to navigate and really improve for rural and agricultural communities in Hamilton.
That's amazing. And I think that really speaks to this, what we're hearing about supporting local and having more, local food in our area and in our schools and in our communities. It doesn't really get much more local than that when you can go to a restaurant on a farm and look over and see, hey, that's where some of this food was grown or some of these other things. And I think that would be like so cool, especially, you mentioned the agritourism. Well, though could go hand in hand with that food tourism, which we know is so strong. And also providing those farmers an opportunity to do a bit better and to keep them in their farms longer.
Absolutely. And that's and I think that's where we want to see things move towards, right? Is just ensuring that our policies align with where economic development initiatives are going. And like you said, it's farm to gate initiatives, it's attracting individuals or to farms for food, for attractions. It's ensuring that we're not putting up invisible barriers for farms to stay operating. And that's ultimately, I think, the thing that many miss, is that these restrictions aren't just to stop people from doing things that aren't supposed to be doing. In many cases, these restrictions are having a negative impact on farms being able to stay in family hands or stay in that area versus be sold off to a larger organization, right? So that's where the balancing, and I think that's where economic developers can play a really good role, is just identifying those areas that have been a barrier and changing them to ensure that they meet the needs of both farm, the community, as well as the municipality.
Absolutely, absolutely. And picking up, you mentioned barrier there. I know there's lots of barriers and municipal challenges in local government. And I know, kind of tying it into what we chatted a little bit about earlier, municipalities often face funding and capacity limits for economic development projects, whether that's, maybe they don't have an economic development department at all, or they have a very small one and there's not a lot of money to go around for projects and such. I'm curious, based on your research and your personal experience, what's one practical solution that you'd propose or you'd recommend to a smaller Ontario community where they could potentially get some more funding for their economic development team or gather more support or funding for some of these projects that they want to work on?
No, it's a great question, and I would say if you're a smaller municipality that like to your point maybe has one staff person or maybe someone doing double duty, highly encourage them to work with the new Ministry of Rural Affairs and or MAFA, right? I think they have really great programs from a business retention and expansion standpoint that can help those municipalities at least get a base of knowledge or a base of understanding as to what their issues are in the community. Whether it's the BRNE program that the ministry has, I believe First Impressions Communities, so I think it's FICE is the acronym, but there's some really good programs that the ministry has that can kind of help those municipalities that may not have the capacity to do their own, let's say, BR&E program or corporate calling program. And I think that is the kind of things that you really need to be able to, in order to go to your municipality to say, hey, I need more money to hire someone, or I need a bigger budget for economic development for projects A, B, and C. You need to be able to demonstrate what those challenges are, I think, beyond just word of mouth, right? I think, like any council, anyone that's making decisions when it comes to funding, they need to be able to see the business case as to why that money is needed, right? And I think that kind of work is what will help smaller communities really convince council, but convince the community, quite frankly, that more money is needed for economic development initiatives. And I think those kind of projects working with the ministry will help smaller municipalities. When it comes to funding new projects or funding initiatives, I would say, or at least funding initiatives within the community, I would say community improvement programs, CIPs, are a great tool. And I think there's a lot of opportunity. I know we in Hamilton, we've done, I think, a really good job with our programs, but also of the messaging of the programs, right? I think, again, municipalities, council want to hear that for every dollar we've invested in the community improvement program, we've seen $2, $3, $4 in increase of that municipal assessment or in that tax base, right? And I think that's the kind of messaging that I think we as economic developers should focus on, because that's what resonates at council. They want to see that for every dollar we've invested in the community, we've got X amount back. And it's very hard, and I think for good reason, for anyone sitting around council to say, why wouldn't that be a good investment when we're getting a return on our money, right? And I think it's that allows economic developers really to utilize programs, and I think to our benefit, ensure that those programs provide a return not just to the community but also to the municipality as well as the one that's funding it. But those would probably be my advice is if you're a small team, work with your ministry counterparts. They have a ton of resources and experience and expertise in helping you develop and create that economic development baseline for community. And then definitely explore community improvement programs where you can demonstrate to your council that you're getting a return on every dollar of investment into your community.
Great advice. And I can tell you from my time back in the day as a city councilor when I worked for the province, those key performance indicators, the partnerships, whether it be with community groups or other municipalities or with the provincial or the federal government, those things go such a huge way. And it's shocking how many groups come forward and request money for things, and they don't have any partnerships. They don't know how much it's going to cost. They just say, "Hey, we have this great idea," and that's wonderful. But it's difficult at times, especially when you're looking for funding. So to have that mapped out and say, "Hey, yeah, we've got different folks on board. We went to this ministry. Hey, they've provided this," and that just adds to your probability of success. And especially when you can show that really simplified of, hey, if we do X, Y, and Z, here is potentially, going to be our outcome. Or, hey, we've already been doing this for a bit, and now here's been our amazing, response and outcome from this particular program, and we want to continue it. I think that's something key to think about, and a bit of that political acuity as well.
Absolutely right, and that's and I think that's where economic developers, I think that's where a lot of our time should be focused on, to your point, is those KPIs, right? I think and ultimately that's the ability not just to defend or to kind of to defend the department, but it's at the same time to defend the programming that we know is creating or creating impact in the communities, creating change that's going to benefit everyone, that's going to increase municipal assessment, that's going to increase the chances of these businesses staying, as well as attracting new investment and new companies into the community. So you're absolutely right. I think it's crucial that whether it's a small or a large team, that we're able to demonstrate the investment, the return on our program, and to your point as well. That is what other levels of government want to see when they're handing out dollars for investment, is what is the return? How can we defend our investment? Because that's at the end of the day, these are all investments into communities, and we need to see whether it's a financial return, whether it's a social return. We need to be able to demonstrate and essentially illustrate what those returns would be.
100% agree. I know you've provided a lot of great advice today, inadvertently, advice for new economic developers or for folks who are currently in the field now, whether they're looking at going to a new municipality or it's somebody who's kind of fresh at the start of their journey, who's looking to kind of break into the field and kind of get their first economic development role. What recommendations would you make for them, or any tips and tricks to get them started or help them out in their journey?
No, great question. I would say the first one is definitely get involved in your provincial organization. So if you're in Ontario, get involved with Economic Developer Councils of Ontario, get involved with EDAC, the Economic Developer Association of Canada, as well as the international one, the IDC. So that's the International Economic Developers Council. I know when I first started and when I took that internship in Amherstburg, I became a member of EDCO through the department, and I joined the awards committee. So I've been probably within 3, 4 months of me starting my career in economic development, I became involved with the professional organizations, and really that is just an amazing way to gain experience, gain kind of increase your network, but get an understanding of really the complete, the significant nuances that are involved in economic development, just because of how large of Ontario is, the amount of different things that are going on. It really opened up my eyes as to what projects are happening, who's who, and allowed me to also navigate what kind of role I wanted to play in economic development. So I would say the first thing off the bat is get absolutely get involved With the Economic Developer Councils of Ontario. It's a great way to network as well as again increase your own knowledge around the field. Also, I would recommend getting to know zoning and planning policy. I know everyone's got great planning staff that they can kind of lean on. My suggestion is always to become a bit more knowledgeable on that, whether it's getting familiar with how to interpret zoning bylaws, whether it's having a working knowledge of your official plan or your secondary plans. For me, that's provided invaluable knowledge of being able just to work with businesses better as to understanding what can or can't be done, what are some of the limitation, and really understanding the rules of development has provided invaluable knowledge for me so I can work better, quite frankly, with businesses in the community as well as when it comes to attracting investment, is that I have better knowledge as to the development processes as well as having a relationship with planning, zoning, and building staff that should questions come up, you can easily reach out and get answers to some of those questions before even the land is sold, bought, or a development application has been submitted. Beyond that, for me, it's also maybe not so much with where news is today, but I know from my perspective, always watching the news and keeping up to date with what's happening at other levels of government, whether it's the budget announcements, whether it's new funding announcements come up. I know even through my work email, I'm signed up through the Ontario Newsroom to get all the funding announcements, whether it's the provincial or the federal government, just to have kind of your finger on the pulse as to what direction, where's the wind blowing, if you will, when it comes to funding initiatives or when it comes to priorities from other levels of government, as that has a significant impact as to where municipalities are going when it comes to funding or programming or economic development priorities at a local level. So those would be the things I would say for if you're trying to get new into the field. The other one I would say is if you're trying to get a municipality or work for a city or work for a level of government, take a look at the private sector. I know that's where I would say I really kind of that's where I really sharpened my pencil, if you will, when it came to a lot of my knowledge and expertise when it comes to writing strategies or writing reports or plans. I would say anyone that's looking at a career in municipal or economic development, the private sector is a great opportunity to really get involved and really get thrown in the deep end, if you will, in most cases, which I tell anyone that's getting into the field or just starting out, if you can get a role in the private sector, it's a lot of work, but there's significant investment into yourself when you're in those roles and working on three, four, five different projects, developing different strategies, writing briefing notes, that kind of thing. So I would say that's also a really good way to get exposure into the field as well as prepare yourself for a role in municipal government.
I think that is great advice and kind of ties into a bit of what you said earlier about strategy and doing things with that long-term outlook. And you know, I like that sharpening your pen and getting into the deep end. I think those are super important, especially when things get stressful and get tight. It's nice to be able to lean back and have that experience where you've been there before and you've been through the stress.
Totally. And I always say when I was working in the private sector, my deadline was 11:59 p.m. And that's a lot later than the municipal deadline of 4:30 p.m. Right. So I can definitely breathe a bit easier when I've had that exposure to multiple projects, multiple timelines, and then coming to a municipal government. So.
Absolutely. I know we've chatted a lot about EDCO and EDCO involvement. I know you mentioned when you first started in economic development that you're on the awards committee and such. I see that you've obviously, from my personal experience, you've been involved with the Bright Ideas competition. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that, about any other related committees you've been involved with, and how these initiatives and have impacted you as somebody being involved with them and how you've contributed to them.
No, great question. And so, yeah, so Right now, I'm the co-chair of the Bright Ideas competition. So that's a competition through the Economic Developers Council of Ontario. I'm co-chair with Belinda Witt Graham of the town of Minto. So that competition really started, I want to say started in 2019, and actually I participated in the first competition with Zach Gable of Brant County, where really this is the idea for the competition was really to give economic developers an opportunity to create or develop responses or toolkits to really the pressing topics that we're facing as economic developers. So I know when I first started in 2019, or when I did the competition in 2019, cannabis was just legalized. So our report was around cannabis legalization and what did that mean for municipalities, whether that came from a licensing, zoning, water, wastewater, recycling, the whole gamut of municipal interaction with a new business, with a new industry. And really, the idea of this competition is we're trying to create a library of resources for economic developers. So each year, you've have different topics that are chosen by the teams, and they're tasked with creating modern solutions to those areas that are of pressing concern, and really trying to create resources for economic developers moving forward. So each year, we have anywhere from 3 to 5 teams compete, where we have the top 3 teams compete at AGCO. Where a winner is determined from that. And actually on the EDCO website, we have the library or catalog of all the former competition and reports that have been provided. So essentially we've had everything created from reports, best practices on entrepreneurship, from toolkits around AI to public sector robots, to resources of how economic developers can support addressing the housing crisis, to performance measurements. So there's really any kind of topic or issue as an economic developer you've run into. We've at the Bright Ideas competition have tried to create resources and documents that can really help move the profession in a positive way to addressing some of these. And I think that's the idea for the competition moving forward is an ability for not just new economic developers, but also seasoned experienced ones to network, to get to know different individuals throughout the province. But ultimately, really, it's a mechanism to move the profession in a positive way to developing kind of essentially a catalog of knowledge and expertise. And I think that's what hopefully we're trying to successfully do. And I know Stephanie or the executive director of ETCO, I know we're working to try to make this a national competition where we're competing against other provinces and have the finalists at the national competition at EDAC. So that's hopefully still in the works. We're moving towards that. But yeah, really, with the Bright Ideas competition, it's trying to increase the knowledge and expertise of ETCO and its membership.
Awesome. I think that's incredible. And as somebody who's also been through the process last year, with I know you mentioned AI, but for anyone who hasn't looked at our report, feel free. AI amplified individuals, the future of economic development in the public sector. And that idea, I know when we went into it and when I chatted with my team, we said, hey, how can we make something that people are actually going to be able to pick up? And they're going to be able to go home to their municipality and use it tomorrow. And that was a big thing for us. And the response was great after the conference, folks reaching out and saying, hey, can we get this? Can we talk more about it? And I think from a strategic example of moving the profession forward that you mentioned is so smart and taking that opportunity to get this knowledge and get this information, because it's I think it was like a 10-month process or so. So there's a lot of info in there. And to be able to reach back as somebody, in economic development and have those resources that you don't have to pay for those reports. And as you know, coming from the private sector, those reports are not cheap. So to get them basically for free is extremely helpful. And then on the actual person engaged in the competition side. I know I learned so much. I got to meet different folks, and also it got me back on the stage after many years of not being up there. And so that was a big big moment for me, and was very beneficial on my journey so far. So definitely appreciate the service that yourself and Belinda and all the others who are involved with that, keep it going. And I think the idea of taking it to the federal level would be super interesting. And if there is an opportunity, shameless plug, to get involved with that, feel free to let me know.
No, absolutely. And I know for those that may be listening, the next competition we usually launch just at the EDCO conference, so on February 2nd to 4th, I believe, or sorry, on the 3rd to 5th, I think it is. Once the competition ends, then we open it up to anyone to submit their name, register for 2026. So definitely encourage anyone that's maybe interested either to reach out to myself. Or look forward to that registration following the Echo conference in the new year.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of the EDCO conference, if you have not registered yet, today is actually the opening of registration, which is October 14th. Not sure what day we'll post the podcast, but you can register as of whenever you're listening to it. So make sure you get there and make sure you come meet Tyson and myself and many, many others that are excited to meet you or reconnect or things like that. Following up on EDCO, I know you've chatted about it a lot today, but when it's the Economic Development Council of Ontario and we're in Ontario, it does come up a lot. And I see that you're also currently seeking a board position on that particular council. I was wondering for any folks listening, maybe you can give them your pitch and why they should vote for you.
No, absolutely. And so, yeah, voting opens up tomorrow, I believe, so October the 15th at 9 a.m. and then closes Monday, December the 1st at 5 p.m. So I like you said, Mason, I'm running to be one of the board of directors on EDCO. It's a 2-year term, I believe. But really the reason I've wanted to join the board is quite frankly, I think what I maybe touched on at the beginning when it comes to local impact is that I see the impact that economic developers have on our community. And I think there's an ability for EDCO, the Economic Developers Council of Ontario, to really be at the forefront of driving that change, being the face of economic developers when it comes to any challenges or initiatives. And what I mean by that is anytime there is especially in today's world where things with tariffs, it seems like every other day there's commentary on tariffs or the economic situation of communities. I really see EDCO being that voice when it comes to if there is something that happens, if there's a change to occur, just like when the news reaches out to any other professional organization to get their comment, whether it be planners, engineers, accountants, I see EDCO being able to provide that advocacy, that input when it comes to the challenges of the day, when it comes to the economy, right? So I really see EDCO being at the forefront of driving change, and to me, that's where I would want to join the board is really to push EDCO in the direction of being the leading voice of advocacy when it comes to economic development. I think economic developers have their ear quite close to the ground when it comes to the economy, but also when it comes to trying to not just attract new businesses, but really what are programs, what are initiatives, what are fundings that are needed to keep our existing businesses here, as well as expanding and growing and succeeding. And I think that's something that, quite frankly, sometimes becomes lost in the conversation provincially, just because I think there needs to be a leading voice when it comes to the impacts on businesses and community as a whole, because businesses are a reflection of the community. So my pitch is how do we drive EDCO to become the organization of when issues arise, EDCO gets the call when it comes to providing commentary. And to me, that's where I see the end goal of EDCO is being the first organizations that the media, the province, the feds, they're calling us to get our input when it comes to policy changes, when it comes to new funding agreements, when it comes to changes at the ministry level. I think EDCO should be at the table just like any other major stakeholder when it comes to government interaction. So to me, that's been my pitch, and I would like to move EDCO in the direction where we're constantly at the table. And I think we've seen that over the couple of years where EDCO has moved in that direction. We have, I know I participated in our Queen's Park Day, where I would say EDCO had a hand in successfully including, and again, this may get into the weeds, but successfully including urban areas in the new revised Rural Ontario Development Program. So since Hamilton's amalgamation and a few other areas, like I said at the beginning, 70-80% of our area is rural. We never qualified for rural economic development funding because we were considered an urban area. Not just us, but areas in Ottawa and a few others as well, where that advocacy done by EDCO as well as municipalities actually drove change where we're now included. And I will say only a few weeks ago, I submitted an application for the rural areas of Hamilton for an agricultural CIP, which that's a funding envelope we haven't had in 24 years since Hamilton's been amalgamated, and that's the result of EDCO advocacy. So again, that's a long-winded me of saying that having myself elected to the board, that would be my main priority, is ensuring or driving EDCO to becoming the first call when there's changes to economic policy direction or projects.
Awesome. I think that's great. And for me, it really, your passion shines through in your answer there. And then, throughout the rest of our discussions today, it's pretty easy to see that you want to make a big difference, and not just in your municipality, but elsewhere, and help folks out, whether it be their business or people in the community. It makes a lot of sense. I'm wishing you all the best on this journey.
No, I appreciate it, Mason. And if anyone listening has any questions or would like to chat with me further, I'm more than happy to chat with anyone about the election or even just EDCO in general. Always happy to.
Awesome. And I'm adding something new in as of today. But is there anything that I have not asked you that I should be asking that you'd think be of benefit to folks listening?
No, good question. So I would say, maybe a question, and I know this has come up in a few areas of my work is how economic developers interact with council, or their interactions, they're kind of how they're interacting or their knowledge base with council. So I know some municipalities, when a new council gets elected, they kind of do an ECDEV 101 presentation just to give councillors an idea of what economic development does. But the reason I bring that up is because I think, at least in the work I've done, I know in my work here, even at the City of Hamilton, I regularly have meetings with farmers, businesses, where the local councillor is actually in that meeting, right? And part of it is the councillor's there to support and raise an issue. But at the same time, I think those are opportunities where economic development can also educate councillors, if you will, as to, well, if there's an issue, why won't if this if there's an issue with this development, why is there an issue? Well, maybe there's an issue when it comes to the zoning or the building code. And I think that's where economic developers have a great opportunity to be similar as EDCO is advocating to higher levels of government. I think we as economic development professionals have an opportunity to be there to educate councillors as to, well, what are the barriers? What are the opportunities for economic development? Because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are voting, that are approving funding priorities, you name it, at a local level, right? So I think there's a lot of opportunity for economic developers to increase their relationship with council, whether it's from an education standpoint or whether it's helping them from an advocacy standpoint, right? I think we quite frankly hear the issues and challenges from businesses in the community, and I know I would say councillors are probably When it comes to those that hear issues from the community, I would say council's number one, and I wouldn't hesitate to say economic development is in not a quite distant second when it comes to hearing some of those issues and challenges, right? So I think there's a lot of opportunity for economic developers to work with council, educate them, and really work with them on pathways to addressing some of those challenges, whether it's local level challenges or whether it's advocacy that's needed at the provincial or federal level. So to me, maybe that's a question as to for economic developers is what's their relationship with council? And if they don't have a regular interactions with council, then that I would highly suggest that that's something that they look or pursue.
I could not agree more with you. And I think, if they don't have that is a major missed opportunity. Being someone, so I served for 8 years and on the AMA board and in other associations, and I can tell you that that is such a major thing, is that relationship building. I remember way back in the day with the Association of Municipal Clerks and Treasurers Association, went up to one of the zones and did a presentation on this very topic, which was that staff and elected official relationship building and how important that is and how it can really make a very large impact, whether it be from the education side or just those, check-in points to talk about projects or what's going on. And especially when there's an issue going on in the community that gets identified by staff of, hey, what are the things around this and how can we work with our elected officials to make sure that, it's a win-win for everybody at the end of the day. So I think that's a great question. I'm going to add that in at some point in the future. And you had a phenomenal answer. Bring us to the end, Tyson. I've got a fun mystery question for you.
Great.
This one is pretty relevant for our discussion today, actually. So someone who is listening right now is going to be attending the next EDCO conference. And they're either a first timer, they're relatively new to the field, or they're an experienced veteran. What would you recommend to them to make the most out of their conference experience, and what tips and tricks can you share?
No, great question. So I would say, so my advice would be to attend the social events as part of EDCO, whether it be the opening reception or whether it be the fun night. I know me growing up, I would say I would, and probably still am a very introverted person. I was always kind of uncomfortable talking with people I did not know or introducing myself, at least early on. But I learned very quickly that those interactions I would say, are the ones that have the greatest return when it comes to your career, right? If you're ever attending those the EDCO conference, definitely attend the opening reception, attend the fun night, and really look to network in between the sessions, or even talk to someone that you may not know, right? I can't count the amount of times I've interacted with someone at EDCO where 2, 3 years down the line, I'm now working with them on a project, or I'm working in their municipality with them, or working for them, right? So to me, that those are the areas where, even if you're uncomfortable, and I can say come from someone that has always, or at least started out kind of being uncomfortable in larger social settings, or talking with people that I did not know, or I had no who idea with. Those kind of small barriers, they start to crack and they start to come down once you talk to the first person, the second person becomes easier, and the third becomes even easier, and so on and so on. So my advice is to face any of those fears head on, because once you break through it becomes a lot easier. And quite frankly, those are the interactions that are going to last beyond the conference. I think the sessions are always valuable. There's always lessons and things learned. I know every time I attend, there's something new that comes up that I always take away and dig deeper on when I leave. But especially if you're starting out, if you're looking to be in this career for 20, 30, 40 years, those are the relationships that are, I think, that are going to matter the most, and quite frankly, are going to be beneficial throughout your career. Even if it's calling someone up with a question, or wanting to work through a project with someone, at least in my experience, everyone's been really, really supportive, really helpful, and everyone seems everyone is very much willing to hop on a call or talk through a challenge because I think we've all been there in some respects, and we've all relied on someone that's been around in the field much longer than we have to help us out. And I think it's that reciprocity in the career that I think allows a lot of people to succeed.
Awesome. I think that's terrific advice, and just going on the one thing, face your fears head on. I think that's so important. There's lots of folks out there who are just, absolutely terrified to go up to a stranger and to introduce themselves and say hello. And it's one of those things, especially in economic development. The reality is, there's going to be new people in your community. There's going to be new businesses, and there's going to be new opportunities that are out there that you don't know about. And if you don't take the time to meet those people and build those relationships, you're not going to find out about these opportunities or some of these issues. And so I think it's super important to do that and to get out of your comfort zone and just honestly just be in the room and make a point. And even I listened to a podcast recently, and the guy was talking about, think of it as an experiment. You go up to the first person, let's say you're terrified, and just say hello first and see how it goes. And then the next person maybe say like a whole sentence. And the important thing is just to get, some words out of your mouth, and hopefully that leads to something else. But then eventually, after you do that so many times, you'll see it's not as scary as you think, and it can lead to some of these amazing relationships that will stand the test of time.
No, exactly. And that's it, you said it exactly. Just face your fear and realize that it only gets easier. It really does. And that's coming from someone that, to your point, I was t terrified of going up and speaking in front of people and everything, and was always shy growing up. And it's something where it always does get easier. And I think that's the best thing to know, is it always gets easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll just end with a bonus one that I just thought of. If you want to learn about more people who are going to be there, listen to the other episodes of the podcast. But in all seriousness, Tyson, I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking the time today and to providing such great content to folks. I know you've taught me a lot, and I'm sure there's a lot of other folks out there who have picked up something along the way, and wishing you all the best in your next adventure.
No, I appreciate it, Mason, and likewise, it's been great working with you, seeing you grow in the Bright Ideas competition as well, and as well as taking on this podcast, right? You're doing great work, so I'm also excited to see what comes next. So really appreciate it, Mason.
Yeah, thanks so much. Hey, you. Yes, you. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode. When I'm out and about, whether I'm, biking or walking or driving, I love listening to podcasts. So it really is special to me that you took the time to tune into Hyperlocal today and listen to our podcast. I want to make sure we're able to give you the best content possible in the future, get the speakers you want, talk about the topics you want, and really make a difference in your community. We want to focus on those little things. And a big thing to help us do that would be if you could take this opportunity to make sure that you're following the channel. If you want, feel free to turn on the notifications, and we can make sure you get notified on the next episode. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for caring about economic development and caring about your community. And keep up the good work. You're not alone out there.